Welcome to Island Coast Radio.
What's that all about?
Well, I don't know.
Mike, that's canned applause.
That was a sound effect CD we bought.
Well, you know, we did a live show last week. I kind of enjoyed the crowd, so.
Yeah, but this crowd isn't going to do you much good.
Oh, yes, it will.
No, they're all dead. Well, they could be.
Anyway.
Anyway, I'm Mike Taylor.
I'm Diane Constell.
And I'm Erica Popino.
Oh, yes. And,
Oh, yes. Okay.
Where was I? Mike
is pulling his finger out of his ass now.
Anyway. Yes, our last show was our live show at Katie's, and we just want to thank LIPRI again and Brian, the owner of Katie's. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we did.
A fundraiser.
Yay!
The crowd agreed.
The dead crowd.
It's not a dead crowd.
Well, they're not here.
If it was a dead crowd, they'd all be smoking grass.
No, they'd be under the grass.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Grateful Dead.
No, not those.
All right, never mind. Anyway, our guest tonight came to our ghost party. Who is that, Erica?
The very special Ron Milioni.
Yes, and Ron Milioni will be joining us in a few minutes. But first...
First.
We want to play some voicemails that we got. So let's get to that.
Hey guys, aloha from your neighboring island to the south, Staten Island. This is Bill from ParanormalSocieties.com, and I was actually calling to prank you, but then I realized that you have a radio show and you have listeners, so your revenge would probably be tenfold. So I chickened out. But anyway, I hope this Halloween season has kept you busy. Hope you guys have a happy Halloween, and I do look forward to keeping in touch. Take care.
I like him, but I have to say, I would prefer the prank.
Yeah, that would
and we wouldn't retaliate. Anybody, prank us.
Call us back.
Wait, what does the crowd think about someone pranking us? Oh. I think they approve.
Gotta love those prank phone calls. What's our phone number, Diane, in case anybody wants to prank us?
It's 631-676-1079.
Leave a message.
Yes. Thanks, Bill from Paranormal Societies.
Thank you, Bill.
ParanormalSocieties.com is the most comprehensive directory of paranormal societies across the United States. If you have a group, you can have your group listed in the directory. If you need a paranormal investigation, you can look up groups by state. It's a really great website. We're listed on there.
Good.
It's ParanormalSocieties.com. Check it out, folks. All right, let's go to our next voicemail.
Hey guys, it's the ghost of Rodney Dangerfield. I was flipping through your show the other day, and I saw that you had on there that you invited on the ghost of Isaac Hayes. What is it? I get no respect at all. Not even if I'm dead, I get no respect at all.
Wait, is Rodney Dangerfield dead?
Yeah, he is. So he's dead just like our audience.
No, is he really?
Yes, he did die.
Holy crap, I didn't know.
Yeah, well, he's dead.
Oh.
Yeah. And
then how did he call? I don't get it.
It was an EVP phone call.
What kind of jokes do dead comedians do? I guess jokes about ghosts, right?
I guess.
I can do some ghost jokes.
Oh, boy. Lord help us.
A ghost and a priest walk into a bar.
No, I got one. Where do baby ghosts go during the day?
They go back to their womb and order womb service?
No. Day scare centers.
God, did you write that one yourself?
Wow, Mike.
What do you get when you cross Bambi with a ghost?
Boomby?
No, bamboo. Ah!
Wasn't that funny? Even the dead people wouldn't laugh.
Why are ghosts bad at telling lies?
Tell us, Mike.
Because you can see right through them.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh. The crowd turned on me.
As well they should.
It's a rough crowd.
Do you have any puking noises in there?
No, but...
No?
That would be appropriate.
I think it would be appropriate. Sorry.
Can we get to Ron now?
The do run, 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 the do run, run.
All right, why don't we go to Ron after these messages? Actually, I have no messages to play.
Okay, then.
Let's go to Ron after this brief musical interlude.
Oh, no.
I have no commercial messages.
So should we sing?
No, I'll just play some instrumental music.
I met him at a party and my heart stood still. Did you run, run, run? Did you run, run? And I played with his equipment. And he let me touch his toys. Did you run, run, run? Did you run, run?
You played with his equipment?
Yes.
Erica didn't sound like you.
All right, you're listening to Island Ghost Radio, and we'll be right back with Ron
Milioni.
Milioni.
Milioni. What are you wearing?
Nice opening.
I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. This is Island Ghost Radio.
Hi, Ron.
How's it going, guys?
So, seriously, what are you wearing?
What am I wearing? Basically, a T-shirt.
That's all?
And a pair of underwear.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I got another question. Boxers or briefs?
Wait. Save all this. We got to do the intro.
It's okay. Boxers or briefs?
Briefs.
Okay.
Now that's out of the way.
See what I put up with here, Ron? See what I put up with?
I guess we should introduce who we have on the phone. Well, we did the introduction already. We have Ron Milioni on the phone. It's Milioni, right, Ron?
That's Milioni. You got that right, ma'am.
Woohoo!
Fine Italian name.
All right, you want to read the intro, Erica?
Ron Milioni has appeared on the Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters and has been the technical consultant on both Ghost Hunters and A&E's Paranormal State. He's also a cast member on UFO Hunters. Ron designs, tests, and researches new technologies to help paranormal researchers. Tools such as EMF detectors, ion generators, portable white noise generators, and Geiger counters, and a lot of other stuff that I don't know what the heck it is. He has a PhD and is educated in both electrical engineering and computer science. Ron has been a guest on countless radio shows and has been featured in numerous magazines. We've only touched on the tip of the iceberg with regards to Ron's experience and skills. The lovely, handsome, and lovable Ron Milioni.
How are you guys doing?
Hi, Ron.
Doing good. Thanks for coming down to our party last Saturday.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was double fun with you guys being there.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thanks
for letting me play with your toys.
Anytime.
Thanks for showing me your equipment.
Yeah, I mean, you like seeing the tools, right?
Yes.
Wait, what are we talking about exactly here?
His paranormal investigating.
Oh, okay. All right. I never know with Erica. I'm sorry. But I got to keep her in check. Oh, Ron. We're really impressed by your resume. I hope you're not sitting back saying to yourself, I will humor these small brain earthlings for a while.
No problem.
All right.
We actually, I think we started getting stress headaches reading through your bio and your resume because there's just so much on there to get through.
Yeah, it might as well have been Chinese to me. It was kind of scary.
I only recognized a few things. I have my Network Plus and A Plus, so I was like, okay, I know that.
You're a seasoned computer guy.
I don't know about that, but I have them anyway. Is it true that some people have called you Q of the paranormal world? And I'm not talking about Q from Star Trek, unless you're feeling omnipotent, but...
Q from 007?
Yes.
Yeah, because basically, I mean, watching the Bond movies way back then, and you got this guy Q that comes up with these, I mean, literally out of the world, cool gadgets for the spy business.
Yeah.
I'm saying, man, this guy is great. So I always couldn't wait for the next Bond movie and go, what is Q going to pop up next with?
Yeah,
so
right.
So it's kind of like the, you could say the inspiration as far as, you know, the guy's always coming with the most toys, the most, you know, stuff, and useful on the show. So I said, hey, you know what? That'd be good to, let's see if we could come up with some useful, well, not toys, but useful instruments that we could, to expand our eyes, ears, and all our senses. Because
right.
Basically, we're just a dumb animal, just like the rest of the animal kingdom out there.
True.
And we, you know, we just don't have a clue what the heck goes around us. So, you know, we can't see in the dark. We can't see, you know, we can't see ultraviolet. Can't see into infrared. And we're pretty dumb.
Yeah.
So how the hell do we get, you know, how do we expand this stuff?
Yeah, so, we don't have the best senses.
If only we were like Predator.
Yes.
Now that would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you get started in the paranormal world? Did you have an experience at one time?
No, actually, it goes way back in the 70s. I'll tell you what was really big. What was really mystifying, I said when I was really as a kid, believe it or not, back then there was more stuff about UFOs than anything else. And the reason is, there were no paranormal organizations around like we have today. There was absolutely nothing. There was no ghost hunting local chapter 101, you know.
MUFON? When did MUFON start?
What's that?
What about MUFON?
No, I'm saying about ghosts. I'm saying back then there was no paranormal organizations at all.
Right.
So, you know, there was nothing like we have today. First of all, there was no internet. So there was no backbone. There was no data. There was no, you know, there was no technology. The most technology was the landline phone with a rotary dial.
How did we survive, by the way?
And your black and white TV. So what I used to see in the press, in other words, in the media, like, say, for example, in the newspaper clippings once in a while, UFO. And I'm like, wow, you know, what is this? So to find out about it, it would take literally months because to contact someone that, if they did have a story, you had to put it through the postal mail. And then if they did get it, and the time they got it, and if they got to it to read it and responded back to you, you could almost have 1 month of a turnaround in communications. Can you imagine that?
Well, you had to rely on the National Enquirer for your UFO news back then.
Exactly. But what's interesting about it, the real original UFO investigation team called Project Blue Book was headed by those five guys in the Air Force, and one was Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was the civilian, it's a employee consultant of the Air Force. And they closed that in like 1969. They actually stopped investigating. So from like back in the 40s to 69, they actually had an active investigation group looking into this phenomenon, and they would publish a lot of stuff once in a while, like the papers, like in the 50s and 60s. If I go back and you start archiving and looking for this stuff, you actually see, you know, serious press about these different sightings. So that's what really got me into the paranormal was actually this UFO phenomena.
Right.
And it was more so real back then because we didn't, you know, you couldn't do any Photoshop. You couldn't do any, you know, you make your own stunts. You put up your own weather balloons. So a lot of this stuff was like, a lot of this stuff could be for real because we didn't have, you know, we didn't have the technology, we didn't have, you know, the instant data that we have today and create stuff on the fly, and, you know, all the customized software applications we have today that can make stuff so believable and the special effects. So you have to believe some of this stuff could be really true, and you even got the Air Force investigating what is going on. Now, the Air Force back then, I mean, huge superpower. I mean, they had the special, you know, Skunk Works that was by Lockheed, who first created the U-2 spy plane back in Area 51. That's the reason why Area 51 was called that. you know, that's in the early 60s. But they got these UFO sightings in the high 50s, mid 50s. They had the one in 1953, which was a bunch of them flying over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And you got the president going, what the hell we got above the Capitol? And they go, well, I don't know, sir. He goes, well, God damn it, go find out. Send our, you know, jet fighters up there. So now if you've got a case like that, you know, the invasion of the Capitol back in 53, and it ain't the Soviet Union, no way, because they're still basically still trying to play, you know, working on their, you know, defense system on their end. So they didn't really have that advancement to come over and peek to us and go back.
Right.
So, like, where is this stuff coming from? So that's what really intrigued me into the paranormal. And it's a lot more, there's a lot more question marks of the stuff back in the 50s and 60s about that stuff that's not answered. So long story short, Project Blue Book had almost about 900 unsolved cases where they can't even, they don't know what to do with them. They don't know, you know, if it's just, was it hysteria or is it basically, it's unknown phenomena. We just don't know what it is. So that's what really got me springboard into it.
Right.
So I followed that for quite a number of years because they had a huge something up in New Hampshire called Incident at Exeter, New Hampshire. John Fuller is the guy that wrote the book. And they had a wave of UFO sightings over New Hampshire. And that's the famous
Betty and Barney Hill.
Hill back in 63
right.
That had their abduction, the first abduction case, real, you know, real, let's say, national and international presence. Again, no technology, there's no web, there's no, you know, there's no publicity stunts, there's no, you know, billion-dollar, you know, box office, you know, special effects team coming out. It's like there's no motive for them to create a little story like that. And some of the stuff that happened to them was actually what she wrote about the, say, the star system that the aliens told her where they came from. You only can see that from the Southern Hemisphere. And she's just a social worker. She doesn't even have an inch or she even took, you know, one basic course in, you know, anything outside of, you know, social science and let you believe, like, well, probably did it really happen to the, you know, to the hills? Most probable, yeah. And then you got the, you know, it says you got these famous cases back then, and that's what this whole paranormal stuff is like. It's, you know, it's been going on for so long, but I think it is people coming out admittedly saying that, you know, we want to research this as a hobby. Back then, there was no community. There's no interchange of communication. So how do I know you have a group somewhere else? I'll never know.
Right.
Right? So if you just think, if you pull the internet plug out, nobody doesn't know who does what unless it's by, you know, someone knows someone by, you know, verbal and then by postal mail, you know. So today, you know, instantly you could just type, we got this underground system that takes care of all our research, you know, finding things like a electronic automated phone book out there. And then that's why the information gets exchanged so quick. So that's why you have a lot more people now making this community bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
So where does that lead me? Well, if you get a lot more people involved, then, you know, what can we, let's use some of the, maybe the newer technology, we could kind of fine-tune it, and let's see if we could get some answers to some of these gateways into this unknown or unanswered area, which conventional science are just sometimes wasting time on. There's been hundreds of millions of dollars of looking at certain galaxies out there, how they're born, but it's kind of static science. In other words, why don't we see, like, hey, is there another real dimension, like within this dimension right here in this space? You know,
exactly.
So maybe we could need to apply some of that, you know, some of that mind power in another direction. So that's where all this fascination goes, and I don't think anyone's ever going to stop it till we actually get an answer. I would say, like, you know, the first day of hey, we definitely contacted the other side, and the other side contacted us. Now we have this two-way QSO going back and forth anytime we want. So when that day comes, it'll be really cool as far as, will most people accept it? a lot of people will freak out, or people don't even want to know what's on the other side.
Right.
If there is another side, right?
Definitely.
So that's what you do is you know, going back to the original opening of the show, is you get your senses beyond your five senses that we're born with and say, can we find out what else is going on in this universe? You know, that's the whole thing about it. You know, like most people, I work and I'm going to do this, and okay, but what's your purpose in life? Like, why are we here?
Exactly.
And what's the reason? Is there logic to it? Or is it just by, I call it chaos. In other words, this has happened to evolve, and then boom, this is where we are now. But there's no force control, no higher intelligence control of what we do here. Like, it's kind of a free-running world.
Right.
We all could kill ourselves, and no one's going to care on the outside. Or there is eyes up there, or a power to be, saying, no, guys, calm down. No, don't. Let's not start a nuclear war. Like, hold on. I'll change some of that course. You know, so that's the whole thing is, you know, like, is there a neighbor next door?
Yeah. To the best of our knowledge, we're kind of just left on our own.
Yeah. You know, and what's really great is you get somebody that says, hey, I saw something concrete. And in other words, it looks like I saw a person sitting up in my bed, and I wasn't sleeping or I wasn't having a dream. It was for real. You know, you get another incident where a person, like, accidentally is, like, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the woods. You know, they're trying to tape maybe the nature of sound, and they hear voices. And there's the only guy or girl themselves camping, and there's not a soul around. Where did that come from? So, I mean, you get these little clues, or little, they call, you know, paranormal droppings, and you know, well, who can answer these questions? You know, like, what's going on?
Well, Ron, on our last show, our live show at Katie's, we asked the question, and we had a poll on our website, what do you believe ghosts are? I'd like to get what you believe a ghost is.
Okay. Now, what I think is, I think that your mind, in other words, the power, in other words, the way you, like you and I and everyone here, we're conversing and thinking in real time, and your mind is, you know, is taking all these signals in and manipulating them and coming out with, you know, say something verbal that makes some kind of intelligent sense to you and I understanding this language called English. I just think that, say these ghosts and stuff, I just think it's that you got to have a biological, like, biosphere to keep the energy, like, kind of, let's say, nourish. In other words, the body.
Right.
So I'm going to say body and the soul. So the soul, I think, is really your actual intelligence, your actual
energy.
What's that?
Energy.
Yeah, your energy that makes your intelligence. So that, you can't destroy or create energy. You could change it. So I think it's when you go from this biosphere to, and it collapses. In other words, it just breaks down. The energy, or your intelligence energy, let's call it, just moves on. It goes somewhere else. So it's just kind of like, say it's a bubble of energy that just goes and says, hey, where do I go next? So can I go back into a new biosphere? No, it's going to be reborn again. Let's say this reincarnation concept.
Mm-hmm.
Or do I just kind of, you know what, hang around because I like this place. I'm like, Ron's little laboratory is pretty cool. Let me hang around here. It's got all these crazy gadgets to play with. Or kind of like, you know what, this place sucks. I want to go where, I really like to go somewhere warm, so I'll just go hang out down where the warm weather is 24/7. So to answer your question about ghosts, yeah, I just think it's an intelligence energy that in certain situations, depending on, say, their past window of their room, that was the room they were in, let's say this planet, and if they got if they naturally kind of like moved on, in other words, well, I know that the biosphere is going to close down, you know, I'm real sickly, yeah, get me out of this, you know, this thing that I can't walk anymore.
Right.
So it kind of moves on, and then maybe it moves on to this next room called this next universe where, hey, there's all new types of friends out there. Let me go collaborate. And then you get the other person, in other words, all of a sudden, just by being at the wrong place at the wrong time, gets struck and killed so quick that the mental comprehension in the biosphere, let's say, framework, doesn't understand that I don't have my body anymore because it wasn't registered. So I still think I have my, you know, my framework with me, but where is it? Well, I know I'm alive, but how come no one's answering me anymore? So the so-called I moved on concept. So that's another theory as far as can you have kind of stuck intelligent energy spirits? Yeah, absolutely. Where they don't they didn't have that point to understand at that point that they were basically transformed from one state to the other so quickly. So that's what I think spirits are. I just think, you know, they're an intelligent energy level that does and understands, let's call it generalized reasoning.
Right.
But it might not understand between one room to the next. In other words, one dimension to the other dimension. So I think at that point, once you leave, they might have the capability where they don't think there's any separation of universes. Where we are, because we're in a different framework, but our mind maybe is kind of closed off on something else. So I ask people this question. I go, well, where were you before you were born? And they look at me and they go, you know, that's a good question. I go, really? So were you considered dead before you were born? Because you weren't in that framework. So
right.
can you be dead before you're born, and then once you're born, then you go back to the other same state again? And some people like almost that kind of like a mental breakdown, saying, "Wow, holy! I never thought about that." I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, you come from one. You had to come from somewhere to, you know, this biosphere body, and then once this body breaks down, you move on again. Now you're still back to the same, are you in the back same, you know, the different room that you started." So people go, "Yeah, I never took it that way and thought about it." So I said, "Yeah." So I said, "I don't know where we were in 1800s. I don't know where I was. I have no idea. So was I dead in 1800? You know, according to this universe, I mean, you know, they say that people think about it, and I'm like, wow, yeah. So, what do you consider yourself in before you were born? What state would you classify yourself? Under development, in other words, you're being created, you're being, or what? Or
limbo.
Is your energy basically it's always on for infinity, except that you go through, you know." You go through different portals or different universes.
Right.
You know, so it's just a piece of comment or another ideology out there.
Well, Ron, you're an engineer. When you are, you know, working, do you kind of say, well, this would be kind of cool to develop for paranormal investigating? Or did you start thinking about that later on? Or was it always in the back of your mind as you start developing things?
No, it's more later on than earlier. It's kind of like going through, like, growing stages. So, like, when you're younger and you're a teenager, you basically want to, you know, go out and get drunk and, you know, see what action's out there as a typical male. So when you're young, you know, we always talked about strange stuff. Oh, you know, what do you think about this, UFOs or ghosts? But never took it real seriously because...
Right.
You kind of like, you know, you're in a mix of the of your peers, what you're thinking about. Like, say, you're thinking about, where are we going next Friday night?
Right.
So I think it's kind of a stage thing in life. So as you get a little bit older and you get a little bit more matured and you kind of like grow out of that a little bit, then you sit back and then you go and think back, oh, you know what, I remember when I read that article, but what's about that thing, you know? So now let's say I'm doing a living, you know, where you're tinkering with technology and you go, you know, if I wanted to try and see or peek into this area that basically there's nothing off the shelf that you could buy to do such a thing, or there's a system A and there's system B, but if I combine the two of them, I could create the system C that'll maybe give me an answer to what I want to poke around in. So look at all these different vertical, you know, I call vertical, you know, specialized equipment to do certain things, and say, well, you know what, if we take that, instead of, you know, doing some, say, gas analysis, maybe we could take this piece of equipment and, I don't know, maybe under a certain light, the ghost or so-called this paranormal stuff may appear in a different form under a different spectral gas and light combination.
Right.
So you kind of think of like that. So in other words, what if you took all these multiple different combinations and you expose it or put it together, and instead of chasing an atom like they do at, you know, at these, some of these national laboratories, that, I don't know, that you might stumble across something in the other unknown area. So that's basically what they're doing. You know, like, well, what happens if we keep splitting atoms? What other new element we're going to discover? Well, if you take that highest level, or you take something more basic level and go, what happens if you turn up the electricity a little bit more in a certain, you know, certain temperature room? What will happen? You know, we have any special effects that might happen, or what happens to the air? What happens if we record that session with a video and let's just watch the electricity go back and forth? You know what I'm talking about? It's stuff like that. That's where I get all these ideas and say, well, if you did this and this and this, but no one ever sat there and said, ah, let me just put this stuff together and see what happens.
Right.
It's just you don't know what your outcome. So I'll give you an example. There's this crazy guy. He's a good friend of mine, too. He was called the Hutchison Effect, John Kenneth Hutchison. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this guy, but he actually...
Is the parkway named after him?
Not, maybe just by coincidence.
Sorry, go ahead.
But if you Google him, Hutchison Effect, on YouTube, he actually levitated material stuff right in front of your eyes.
Oh, is that the guy that he lifted up the bottle and he's got,
yeah,
like
the
balls of paper? Yes, I've seen that. Yes.
So here's a guy, a maniac, that has every piece of surplus electronic military equipment in his apartment, and he says, "Well, I'm kind of you know, he's like a man. Besides a mad scientist,
what does he hit,
like
the aerospace like dumpster at the end of the day?
Exactly. He just says, let me turn up this amplifier, let me turn up this frequency, let me multiply this waveform with this waveform, and let's see what happens. So by making a combination of different systems that he kind of just put together, which might make no sense to any, you know, say, professional engineer, and they say, what you're doing is absolutely crazy. You know, you're going to blow yourself up. All of a sudden, he creates this new type of, you know, anti-gravity force, and voila, you got this Hutchison effect, which he said, I couldn't design it. If I wanted to really design it, you know, on a whiteboard and had guys behind me, you know, professional scientists saying, yep, you need to do this step, and then if you do this step, you should get this effect. He was basically... experimented with different combinations and created this Hutchison effect. And there is a perfect example of a guy just basically just taking stuff and doing some combinations of stuff by maybe one system affecting another system, and goes, oh, so let me enhance this further and see what happens more. Oh, let me try it further. So exactly. So you get this tinkerer out there that's basically putting stuff together with no really formal logic to his plans, and he gets some world discoveries of stuff that the military is even looking at and saying, wait a minute, Mr. Hutchison, I think we got something here. So it's an example there to show you that if you play around with, you know, say the frontiers of science, anyone, just try some other methods or some other combinations of stuff, you could stumble something that's really, could be really beneficial to people that want to use this type of, you know, say, cool energy or tool or resource, right?
Right.
Hmm. Ron, right now, what do you believe is the most promising piece of, like, over-the-counter technology for paranormal investigating? Do you think it's video, audio? What do you lean towards?
I think what happens is, see, what we see is what we believe. So what we see in the visible spectrum is what we believe. It doesn't say that if, for example, there's stuff that's outside our visible observation, there's a visible electromagnetic spectrum. I think, for example, infrared technology is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I think it is, out of all the tools out there, I would choose to really experiment or really would utilize is infrared technology. So thermal imaging, for example, I think that's one of the strongest phenomenal tools. Of course, it's a military, again, a military concept, military design, and they made that happen. But they got really, you know, just think of the multiple millions of dollars of research for them to come up with it from the beginning. So now it's an almost, you know, any type of commercial type of business, you know, that's doing work where they need to, like, find where presence of cold and heat, you know, beyond, you know, different material layers, that this instrumentation that could get it, you know, check temperature or whatever on the fly in the infrared region, and also now have that in storage so you could review it and exactly, you know, put and see what the difference is and how, why it went from cold to hot. And also, if there is a heat signature, that it actually creates an outline, and if the outline looks like so-called a person,
right,
in an area that's not supposed to be occupied, mm-hmm. what does that tell you? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. So I think this, again, this to answer you, this to get a, answer your question, I think the thermal imaging technology is phenomenal and definitely needs to be more expanded. So the disadvantage of it, it's so high priced,
right?
So that it's not economical for a lot of good, excellent groups out there. I mean, the thousands of paranormal groups out there. If that came down to $175, that uses the same advantage technology that, of course, now at $5,000 and up. Just think, if you got all these groups having this piece of instrumentation, how much more maybe data and evidence that we'll have collectively that we can actually say, hey, now there's really something really going on here, because all of us are getting some activity at this frequency range, which is infrared.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I think that's a great. See, what's good about that too? See, seeing something instantaneously, but you can't hold or capture the data. I call it data loss. So you get these, you know, like I've been playing around with EMF storage systems. So you got an EMF detector system. I go around now, and actually, it could store all my readings for, say, 2 hours, and then I could plot it on a computer program for analysis. But it'll show me all the peaks, the spikes, you know. But so I could create a model where here's your, you know, high activity at certain time duration. So in other words, we have a baseline. So in other words, 8 o'clock at night, you know, I get a high reading. 11 o'clock and I got another high reading. Now, if I go back to the same place and repeat it, is it going to happen at the same time? If it does, then there's some trend going on, which is great.
Right.
But that's where the storage data is really useful. But if you got something now that you could actually, you could have what they call as on video pixelization, where you could take each pixel and then you could actually outline some kind of image, you got a lot more data points. And then from there, you could actually maybe you could get that data points and say, now, is this data points where is this thing that you caught, does it actually have substance to it? In other words, thickness to it? So instead of, let's say, I got a piece of plexiglass, and then you basically, you shine a light through it, and let's say part of it reflects because the substance of it, but even though it's still passing through most of the wavelengths of the light, you get a little bit of reflection coming back. Now, if you capture that data, then you can almost calculate and say, well, you know what, there is some density to that material.
Mm-hmm.
So now imagine if you take the infrared and the video and you take that information and you could store it. Is there density to that unknown that we captured? So-called, let's call this the spirit. Now, does it have density to it? Yes, it does. How much density? That's where this type of technology is really, really useful. So the more we could explore that area and get more data points, you know, more data collection back from that, this, besides a picture, that's where it gets really, really exciting.
Right.
And that's where this stuff has got to get, you know, more lowered into, you know, lowered and cost effective, where a lot of serious researchers out there could really use this stuff. So I think that's going to happen in the next few years, where thermal imaging is going to be almost so cost effective that, instead of buying a set of new tires for the car, you could go out and buy a portable thermal imaging camera.
I hope so.
and could you just imagine everyone will just basically say, hey, I got this, you know, and here's my data file, you know, then I pull it down, I can analyze it, someone else could pull it. And then you could just collaboratively, you know, it's just great. See, photographs, it's only two-dimensional. So
yeah.
Photographs are great, but, you know, it becomes stale and static because it's not, even though it could be a digital photograph, there's no, and so, again, you're working in, you're working more in two-dimensional because with a movie, with a video, then you could have three dimensions as far as, you know, you could try to get almost manipulate, the height, width, and depth, plus the time element, too. As the thing is moving, you can reference this against time. So when you put all these four factors together, you can now really create more of a, three-dimensional object to look at and manipulate. Where just a static photograph, like I say, including digital, it's two-dimensional, and you can't really do much data with that, you know? You could say, well, yeah, it looks like a ghost. Or, yeah, it looks like a third person, even though it was two people present in the picture. But I can't go beyond that. In other words, I can't prove or disprove at that point that, yeah, it's a real thing. You know, so that's why we need more data points. And that's where, like, video is definitely going to be hot. But
we all need to just constantly walk around with helmet cams on.
Helmet infrared thermal cams.
Yeah.
With a terabyte in your behind of storage.
That's right.
And a battery pack on the other side.
Lots of batteries. Exactly. If you just joined us, you're listening to Island Ghost Radio. We're speaking with Ron Milioni. Diane, you had a question?
Yeah, Ron, I wanted to ask you, what's the craziest response you've ever gotten from your equipment?
From what? I'm sorry.
From your equipment. The craziest response?
Craziest response.
Your electronic equipment.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example of a piece of vertical equipment that I kind of said, you know, I could use that technology and it's off the shelf. Just kind of tune it up and change it a little bit. So a lot of alarm companies, they use, you know, when you walk into the place is alarm. You walk into a door, you open up the door. And you have what they call it's a high frequency, it's a microwave beam. So as you distort the beam, as it returns back to the receiver, we call it, it also says, wait a minute, my I'm supposed to have a, like this 120 degree window. Now it's distorted to 60 degrees. So something is absorbing or blocking my other 60 degree stuff. So therefore, I don't know, ruin alarm. So take that same thing, take this like microwave detector system using alarm systems, and then you shoot this thing down cell block 12 at Eastern State Penitentiary. Place is not open for business. This is not a public place. It's not a resort. it's an isolated, you know, so-called prison. Mm-hmm. So now I set up this microwave trip system, kind of like a trip system. And it's dead in the winter. I would say 17 degrees is the temperature. I don't think you're going to have any type of animals, cats, roaming around, especially that type of temperature, because the place is not, you know, doesn't have the heat on.
Right.
There's no heat. There's no electricity.
Right.
And there's no food there or anything, so there wouldn't be rats.
Yeah. And it's at the third level.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It trips a number of times. And the number of times that it trips, it's been tested, field tested, for what we call false positives, and it never trips. It only trips when intentionally the beam is actually broken. We even had where, you know, I sit the unit on a tripod and have the beam 4 feet off the ground. So no matter how big fat cat could walk on the ground, or even a possum, it's not going to interfere with the beam because now it's four and a half feet above, you know, the base level of the ground. Still trips.
Wow.
So I have a high reference signal that is very, we call it directional, because microwave is very directional. It's almost like if you're driving your car and you're doing the speed limit and the guy shoots a laser beam at you and he says, you're doing 85 miles an hour. So that's a precise, direct signal, right? Except that's using what we call light amplification simulation by the emission of radiation. That's laser. Here we're using microwave, which is almost like, it's like your cell phone on steroids, so it's about 4 to 5 times higher in frequency than your cell phone, which is around 825 megahertz, so which is 10 times higher than your FM, basic FM station. So you can see where I'm going with these frequencies way up there. So microwave is very directional. And to break it, I mean, you're going to have some real substance to break that signal. Eastern State Penitentiary hits 3 or 4 times in a night with different levels of elevation. Not a soul around, not an animal, nothing. But supposedly the most haunted cell block at the penitentiary.
Ron, are you speaking from experience, or is this hypothetical?
Yeah. No experience.
Oh, well, we're going to Eastern State in about 3 weeks, so.
Yeah. Any recommendations?
Are you going on the weekend?
Yeah.
What day are you guys going on?
I think it's November.
If you want to join us, Ron, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, you guys going down like on a Saturday or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe count me in because that sounds good to me.
Cool.
All right.
Now, cell block 12 is closed to the public. And then when they do the tour, they don't give the public access to cell block 12.
Okay.
I don't know the reason why. It's structurally sound.
Uh-huh.
But I'm telling you, that is, I mean, I actually felt tremendous amount of heaviness. You feel like you're really underwater when you're up in that area.
Well, we actually reserved the prison for the night.
Oh, so you got free room in the place?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing the nighttime thing, just our group.
Oh, okay, great. And cell block 12, that's the hotspot. That's where the microwave system kept tripping out.
Hmm.
I mean, that place, I tell you guys, at night in that place there,
yeah.
Especially, it's definitely that there's something going on there as far as some entities. And for it to break the microwave signal like about 4 times, and it's like dumbfounding. I said it doesn't make any sense unless something's out there. Now this is the other piece of data I don't have. It's breaking the beam, right? If it is, then there's some kind of substance to it.
Right.
That's the key. If we could collect or I could capture that substance, and that's where now you could run, which you didn't run. You run a parallel thermal imaging camera at the same time recording, stationary, where, let's say you have that station at 5 feet high, and at 3 feet high, on this mini tripod, you run that microwave signal down the same way. So now you got video capture at the infrared region, and then you have a microwave signal going down. So now you got like a redundancy going on. So the microwave signal goes off, the infrared should pick up whatever the interference is. See what I'm saying? See,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
So that's a real good, you know, that's an approach that would, you know, I would do. And those type of eyes. Now, what's also pretty interesting, we could probably rent maybe for $100. It depends on the company, to rent a high end thermal imaging camera for like a week or so.
Really?
Wow.
Yep. So some places, you know, of course they know the prices. So high. I mean, you know, they're not going to buy it, but if, you know, they might say, okay, you guys can rent it. Maybe we need at least they rent it by the month or every 2 weeks.
Right.
But it'd still be worth, even like say, even if it's $200 or whatever, to have a high-end piece of equipment like that. So at least you could keep that data.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And if you get something on it, you know, you could probably have one of the best pieces of evidence out there.
Awesome. Because
most people don't do that. They'll just, you know, what's affordable off the shelf, which does make sense because, again, this, most of us do this. It's not for profit. You know, it's for interest. It's for research.
Right.
And it's not a profit-making type of business.
Right.
Right.
So, but, you know, maybe you can look into where they might give us a good discount because we basically want to use it for, you know, paranormal research. So, they might give it as an educational discount instead of a commercial discount. Because you say, hey, we're not looking for gas pipes or stuff. This is really part of a – just think of it. It's an educational type of adventure. Right.
We're not using it to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Great idea.
Yeah. Well, we're almost running out of time here, but I wanted to get your take on a few things. You've built portable white noise generators, am I correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that for EVP work?
Yes, it is. EVP. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about EVP? Do you think it's very promising?
Oh, absolutely. I did something with Paranormal State. One of the episodes were, long story short, there was a suicide in this house in Queens, and that's really in Far Rockaway. They sold the house to this next party, and this next party was living in a home, and they happened to have their in-laws come over one night, and all of a sudden the in-laws was sleeping out in the living room because they only had, I think, 2 bedrooms. So they said, no, we'll stay out in the living room. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, their cot happened to go crazy, throwing them off the cot up and down. In-laws were like ecstatic. They basically said, we're out of here. And of course, the owners of the house saying, what the hell goes on? What happened here? How can this be? And they did some investigation, found out the house that they purchased from, the wife committed suicide. So the woman, the present owner, she just happened to have her tape recorder on one night because she was trying to tape something off the TV, conventional tape cassette. And she left the room, and she actually shut the TV off and left the tape recorder on. That's what the story was. And they went out for to dinner. They came back. She goes, oh, Jack, I left the tape on. She stopped it. You know, private house, no tenants, no other people living there, just husband and wife. She happens to go, rewinds the tape and plays it, and hears a voice. And she goes, huh? And she hears another voice, moving down the line another couple of minutes. And she gets so fascinated by it, she goes, where are these voices coming from? So she happened to put the tape recorder on again, let it go to record, and she was picking up these voices. So then she contacted, I think, her priest, and the priest says, oh, I don't know what that is. Maybe you need to come back to paranormal people. And she did, and they said, you're picking up voices from the dead. And that's all they had to say to her.
Yeah.
And they never did anything else. They said, don't do that. Let us come investigate. So she was basically... did it every night, and when finally that case came to us in Paranormal State, she must have had a collection of 300 cassettes of recording.
Wow.
and multiple voices. It was like one dominant, you could say dominatrix, one dominant voice and the other.
That's a different show, Ron.
Oh, okay. And the voices around were kind of like subliminal, you know. So we went there and I said, no, you're bringing more people on. And we explained to her about the electronic voice phenomena, how the whole science behind that. But she was basically was addicted to recording this night after night after night after night. It's all she would do. So she gave up her bowling nights. She gave up going out on the weekends with her husband. All she wanted to do was tape all these unknown voices.
Hmm.
So that's one of the episodes we did. True story. Uh-huh. So to answer your question, absolutely, they got some real substance to it. But again, we got some data, but we need a little bit more data. But what else can we influence? So I kind of ended with this one all because I know you said you're running out of time.
Yeah.
I was thinking of doing, so I figured they could operate at ultra-high frequency. So in other words, when the recorder picks it up, our human voice doesn't get it in real time. The machine does, because the machine could record out, say, to 19 to 20,000 hertz.
Right.
So we top off at, say, it's 16,000. So if they're trying to communicate back in real time, they might be going at 18 to 20,000. We're not going to hear it. So what I was thinking of, I have this one system working where on an ultrasonic receiver, I pick up ultrasonic sound, and I step down the audio frequency down to within our audible range, let's say from 3,000 hertz to 15,000 hertz, and then I can listen to that in real time. So the second part is this, I call it this interactive EVP system, is to have a microphone that goes from our audio range and then steps it up to ultra-high frequency and shoots it out at ultra-high frequency at the same time. So I could say, you know, like, Susan, are you there? So you and I will hear this right now, but it will go out through the ear at ultra-high frequency, and if she responds back, we'll hear it in real time. Yes, I am here. You follow that path that I'm trying to paint?
Yes.
I call that the IEVP concept. So I got it working one way. Ultra high frequency receiving is fine, but now I have to do is have the transmission going back. So we call that duplex. In other words, as you and I, if we talk at the same time, we're duplexing. If
yes.
I talk and I stop and I wait for you to talk, we call that simplexing.
Yes.
So I have it working simplex, but the next step is to get it working duplex.
That would be great.
I could have the simplex thing working if we go to Eastern State. So going down some hallway and we're listening to ultra, well, who knows what we'll pick up. And that we could record in real time, because once it steps down, I could split that signal out, one to our headphones, the other one to a digital tape recorder.
Sounds like a date. we're running out of...
Absolutely.
We're really running short on time. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah, there's kind of a little cute community site at what we put up called paranormalfactors.ning.com. Kind of like anyone could join. It's kind of like it's a small little community right now. But if I put up some ideas, concept, whiteboard stuff, you know, ideas about equipment in the future. So that's kind of a place if you want to.
Awesome.
Post videos, pictures, videos, you name it. So I know there's a bunch of them out there, but I'm calling the concept here paranormalfactors.ning.com.
Awesome.
All right, so everyone check it out. Ron Milioni, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, guys, it was great, and definitely it's a date on Eastern State Penitentiary.
Awesome. I'll be contacting you during the week.
Yeah, send you the info.
I will. You got it, dear.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.